Welcome to the official podcast of the Irish Association of Speech and Language Therapists, the IASLT in Conversation. Today, we are speaking with Gina O'Donoghue, a recently retired speech and language therapist who worked for 40 years in the Irish Health Service, primarily in St. James's Hospital. Gina has a wealth of knowledge of experience, both initially as a clinician and later in her career as a manager. Thank you so much, Gina, for joining us today, and you're really welcome to the podcast. So I guess we'll start with maybe your early career and what inspired you to become a speech and language therapist.
Thank you very much, Caroline, and ISLT for asking me to join this podcast. I'm very honoured, and I'm delighted. It's been a very interesting journey over the last few days to actually reminisce and look back on my career. I've been enjoying my retirement, retired 20 months now, but I suppose, first of all, I've always been very passionate about speech and language therapy. A very obvious thing was that I just really felt I'd like to help people. That inspired me to who had a communication or problem talking. So that's what got me involved, and I was probably one of the first couple of classes maybe to move maybe 3 years into training in Trinity College Dublin. So I enjoyed the college experience while being immersed in the profession. I suppose I've worked initially, I just worked in another hospital, and then I was employed by the Eastern Health Board, which is HSE, and seconded into James's, which is unusual. And then I started working in James's and have been there for about 38 of my years in career, and built up a service by getting St. James's to actually employ their own speech and language therapy staff. And that's really when the service was able to develop. So I've really had an amazing journey over the last 38 years.
And what have been the highlights of your career?
The highlights probably of my career, very, very interesting to think about that question. And I suppose the highlights have been, I've been very lucky. I feel very privileged. I'm a positive person, but I've been lucky with my employers, and St. James Hospital have been very good to me. And I've also probably been two most big important highlights for me have been my staff that have worked with me. And also just making sure that the patients would always come center. And I've been able to develop a service over those few years. I suppose the highlight would be for building up clinical specialist services in areas of medicine for the elderly, clinical specialist posts. We have six clinical specialist posts. And I think for me that was just developing and seeing the need, and then pursuing those clinical specialist posts along with other senior staff. I suppose James's is very well known for its particular work with cancer patients, and I suppose that has been a great joy to me to see the service developed for cancer patients. And we've had a couple of firsts with the first upper GI clinical specialist in Ireland, and other ICU clinical specialists in ICU. So I suppose developing the team of seniors and then having a deputy has been also the most amazing thing. Not sure if I can mention names, but I've been so truly lucky to have an amazing staff and team with me all the way through my career. And I think that for me as a person, people's person, has been the most important thing for me, to have that wonderful dedicated team that have made my job a lot easier. Another highlight has been, I suppose, setting up professional supervision within my team, which was getting a little bit more challenging as my team grew from myself really and one other senior to a larger team over the years. Developing a formal peer supervision, a setup and structure within my department, and then also developing peer supervision for managers. So those are some of the highlights. It's difficult really when you're starting to think about it, but those would be some of the highlights for me.
Yeah, it sounds like there was a lot. I think the service grew so much while you were in it. Yeah,
that's right.
From what I've heard, you were integral really to that growth.
Oh well, one doesn't see it as that, but oneself. But I might have a little tap on the back. But I've enjoyed. I suppose I just love my profession so much. So it hasn't felt, now having the benefit of I suppose 20 months away from the career. I was finding actually very difficult to think about challenges, but I know that's always the flip side of what my highlights are. And I suppose overall that time, as I said, my priority was always to focus on giving the very best, providing the best service for my patients, and my own particular love was always medicine for the elderly, and then looking after and minding the well-being of my staff. And I suppose the challenges there were when the needs grew and grew, particularly when specialist services were acknowledged within our acute hospital, and then not being able to provide that service. I think for my own staff as well as a manager, that was always a hard feeling, and I know other managers will probably, or any seniors in areas or even standalone posts will identify that it's a really tough call, especially when you see that your maybe patients aren't getting the service they want. But I know it's a problem with all managers and teams at the moment that they can't seem to get enough staff. So it wasn't my own issue, but I suppose just in hindsight, was probably one of the biggest issues, the under-resourcing of staffing, particularly in specialist areas. And also, I suppose the biggest challenge for me was COVID and managing the team in COVID, worrying about their welfare, worrying about the different guidelines, and every day was changing. And it really highlighted for me that the dedication and the pure, I suppose, amazing, I suppose inspiration my staff were in those times when we had to decide who was going into the ICU and those wards with COVID. And I suppose when we came out the other side of it, I mean, it did have implications for people's well-being, but that probably, looking back, for me was the most difficult part time of my career. But we got through it, and I hung on there, and hopefully supported the staff with the help of my wonderful deputy dear and all my seniors. But I know, I'm sure everybody now, when you think about it, you're going to think, oh, gosh, what was COVID? But I hear a lot of people talking about another strain coming up, and that's one thing I can just actually, for the first time probably in my life, say, thank God I don't have to be worried about that. You know, if I get it, I'm not going to be in danger or at risk, keeping anybody at risk. Is that
I'm
okay?
sure. I'm sure it was a really difficult time to be managing staff, you know,
Yeah.
especially in the hospitals and with kind of fragile patients.
Yes, and I suppose the public didn't understand, well, what are you doing in work? You know, and that kind of upset me a little bit. I mean, we were very, we, you know, was thinking, you know, and it was a bit of, I suppose, about the whole promotion of our profession. You know, I just it's sort of all of the team were there, and there was just a bit like, what have we done wrong that people don't understand that speech and language therapists are integral to patient care. You know, so I don't mean that in a very negative way, but I think it's just a promotional thing with us, you know. And every single day for those few years I was one along with people working in healthcare and nursing homes, where they often the only cars on the road going in, and making sure everybody's okay. And every a lot of other people had the same issues. But anyway, that thank God we all came out the side. But I suppose I saw my team as like an extended family, because I don't have a huge family myself. And I probably took everybody's welfare very, very, very seriously. And you know, when a couple of my team were pregnant, I really, really, really lost a couple of nights' sleep, because we didn't know what the guidelines were at that stage, you know. But all's well and well, and what we can hopefully look back with the sense of humour and the sense of camaraderie that we all gave each other, including the profession itself and all our colleagues and teammates. And I suppose that's another highlight, working over the years is the importance of working on a team and multidisciplinary team and support that we all need and got, both, you know, both from our colleagues in other professions as well.
And I think you raise a really good point about kind of promoting our profession and what we do, and maybe the lack of knowledge of the general public about what we do. But when I was speaking to people this morning and saying I was interviewing you today, they highlighted your contributions to the profession and how much, you know, you have brought on and, you know, people's knowledge of what we do and you know, other, I guess, other clinicians' knowledge of what we do. So I think that's really important, and I suppose it's a continuous thing, but also to acknowledge how much you have contributed to that is really important.
Well, thank you very much. I never see that side, but I appreciate it. I do.
Was there anything that you might have done differently throughout your career, either in COVID or in, you know, during other times of your career that you might have liked to change?
Well, I suppose the whole moving from clinical to managerial was a big challenge for me, because I was always, and I can see maybe other people will kind of understand what I'm talking about, and that was nearly like a kind of a grieving process to let go of the clinical and realize as my team grew that I couldn't see patients and continue to manage, and you know, the reality call to do it properly, to do my job properly. So letting go of the clinical and just going full-time into managerial, and I needed to, as the team got so big, and luckily I did have support as well, was hard. And I suppose it's because I think we're all trained as and we have the impetus and I suppose the motivation to work as a hands-on clinical speech and language therapist. So what I just had to get over myself, and you know, I settled into the managerial role. But I often thought, oh, could I not just do a little bit of clinical? But I knew I had to be honest with myself and say that actually the patients wouldn't benefit, because I needed to put my energy into managing my team and being part of the wider you know, I suppose, group in the hospital and contribute other ways. I suppose the only thing I probably, in hindsight now, was there was always a scramble, you know, in any service, acute hospital or otherwise, to try and make sure that we could try and get staffing, and with recruitment issues and challenges over the 40 years, you know, we went through peaks and troughs. I mean, when I got my post, it was, you know, embargoes and I was able to get myself and a senior in, and then the health board. A lot of challenges there, but I think I'm just sorry I didn't try and push more for assistance and to have a few assistants, because the role of an assistant, and I see it in some of the other hospitals and other areas within SLT, is absolutely crucial, and I think it really would have helped us. But always when it came down to it, I always opted for the clinical staff, and I probably think if I was braver, I think I would have had to make some harsh decisions and say, no, look, let's just go for maybe trying to push for an assistant, because think of all the other disciplines in the hospital, you know, nutrition, physiotherapy, occupational therapists have assistance grades, but we don't have in James's. So that's probably one of the things I do differently. And just probably not be afraid to look for more maybe support and to look for peer support a little bit more, and maybe get my deputy post formalized an awful lot sooner than it actually did, although it was an informal setup, just in recognition of the role that the post holder, particularly Deirdre Gilchrist, played. Now, the great thing is I found it very difficult when I was retiring, you know, to wonder it was so much of myself had gone into those 38 or 40 years in speech and language, but delighted to see that the ship has a very good captain now that I've gone in, and that definitely helps. But is that okay?
Very good. And what advice would you give to have someone, for someone starting out in the profession of speech and language therapy?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I suppose to be brave. I mean, I know this newer generation are very curious. They do their research, but don't be afraid to research posts, you know. Try and if anyone can to work in an area that has good support, you know, seeking supervision, making sure that's in place. I know also not being afraid to ask for help, and I know that's part of always our induction and when we're mentoring new staff, but it is really, really important. It's not a sign of weakness, it's a sign of strength. And just to have a team around you when you start, rather than working single-handed. And not be afraid to move around a little bit, you know, not because I think you really don't know when you start first, even though our training is wonderful and it qualifies us to deal with everything, but not to be afraid to switch. I mean, I've had a few, and The wonderful thing about my department is that I've had so many loyal staff that have been with me for 20, 30 years. But then one or two we've kept in touch when, particularly when I retired, and they switched and went into paediatrics. And we forgave them for that. But don't be afraid to try different things, and just be involved in professional activities as well. And the ISLT is a fantastic resource. And I was over my career, involved both at an education board and in the managerial capacity in the managers group. And even though a lot of people have this, I'm too busy. I mean, I don't think that is a good excuse anymore. I mean, for the profession, we see the bigger professions, just promoting themselves, and I think we need to be brave, and we need to just carve out a little time, and it definitely helps the profession overall. Just put up your hand and just do it. So you not nobody can be harmed, and you always learn by just being brave, and it definitely benefits you and your I suppose your own profession. And your own, I suppose, ability to gain confidence in taking on roles and committees and everything,
Yeah, I think that's great advice because sometimes I guess we can become so overwhelmed with the busyness of the job because I don't know, is there any speech and language therapist in Ireland that isn't busy because of, the pressures of services? So I guess sometimes we can become so focused on that other things kind of take a back seat. So I think that's really really interesting advice of, getting involved in other committees. And it comes back to that promotion, doesn't it? Of speech and language therapists and what we do.
And I think, I mean, you can't be giving out about the profession. I know we're all members of CORU, and it's been fantastic to have that. But you can't be throwing stones if you're not involved. You can't make changes unless you actually are ready to commit to help with that change. And there is a huge satisfaction out of it. So that's that that that'd
Absolutely.
be.
Would you have any hopes for SLT as a profession in the future?
Yes, I mean, I would hope, that more younger therapists would be inspired to join ISLT. There's so much, as I said, that we can ISLT give back, particularly, in the last 10 years. But courses on offer, I know there's even the website for advertising jobs, and I suppose the only thing that I probably, thinking back to the development of the career structure over the long 40 years sounds like an awful long time now, but is that it really needs that the career structure needs to change to I suppose to promote the role of the advanced practitioners. I think it's still very rigid. I think it's not as easy to move. There's just basic senior clinical specialist, deputy maybe manager, and I think it's a shame that there aren't there's more other areas, nursing particularly. I know other professions have that role, and I would like to see that happening in the future.
Great, yeah. And I know you mentioned kind of being an SLT, in the ISLT, and kind of what do you see as maybe what your favorite thing is about being a member of the ISLT over the years?
I mean, I suppose it got a gave opportunities. Now, I didn't ever manage to get off on anything very any trips or anything, but was meeting new people. I would being promoting the profession. I suppose learning, being on committees and learning, it taking on chair roles. I was a chair of the education and also of the managerial groups. I really probably feel that it was a great opportunity for networking. And you can't, it's a very, sometimes you use that word, but in our profession at the moment, and across any type of work you do within SLT, you need to network. And obviously we're hugely good at communicating, but I just gave an opportunity to network, to learn from other people, to get ideas, and also for support as well. And particularly the development of the peer, I suppose, managerial peer support and peer supervision was hugely benefit. It doesn't mean to say that staff overall don't have maybe support, but it those peer supervision groups are very important, because sometimes maybe you can't discuss things in with your manager, whereas you can I'd like to see a lot more of that actually. It's actually peer support, but every place and every I suppose every area of employment maybe has different ways of supporting staff. But I think really it's the opportunity to network, to meet colleagues. And I think that was hard when COVID came, because then everything sort of moved on Zoom, and then people sort of said, well, especially the ISLT managerial meetings of late, but maybe before that. So, but I really feel that we miss out when we don't actually see people face to face. And I'm a firm believer in actually picking up the phone and ringing somebody or meeting somebody, rather than, I know that sounds like probably I'm an old fossil at this stage, but I cannot emphasize the importance of that. For you'll talk to someone, you'll get a little idea, you'll share a thought, you might even just share some little frustration. I mean, one of the benefits of I suppose my career to date is that I am actually qualified as a coach, an executive and personal coach in 2021. I did a diploma in COVID, as you do. But and that has been a great joy to me, because I'm a very po a positive person, and any career coaching or life coaching is very much based on the positive psychology of goal driven and setting and seeing positives in people. But it really is just networking would be hugely important.
And I think you make such a good point about meeting people in person and having that connection. It's really about connection, isn't it? Because I know we're doing this via Zoom call today, but I suppose as speech and language therapists, we kind of know that non-verbal communication has such a big impact on how we communicate and the relationships we make. So I think you're right, and online has afforded us so many opportunities of as connecting with people maybe that we wouldn't connect with, but then it's a different type of connection.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What advice do you have for someone coming up to retirement or someone maybe who has recently retired?
Yeah, loads of advice. Don't make a snap decision, I suppose. And I was lucky. I was able to make that decision over good 6 months. I suppose the biggest change is when I always worked more or less full time, so it's quite different going from full time work to nothing. Now, I wasn't in for a whole load of reasons the position to go part time, but I think it's just to just hope. I was very lucky that I had quite a lot of hobbies and interests before I retired, and I do think that's really important to foster those before you retire, because a lot of people say, oh, you should take on all kinds of different things. One of the best advice I got was actually don't do anything too different. Don't take on anything too major for the first year, and I actually found that really helpful advice. Now, I did have luckily quite a lot of hobbies and interests, which we won't go on and go in here now. So I was always lucky that way, but I was absolutely exhausted when I retired. I thought there was something wrong with me, and I thought, oh my God. Now, not that I was so pollux I couldn't get out of bed, but I think it was cumulative, and it's okay to be tired. It's okay not to be jumping and trying to fill every minute of every day. I was very lucky as well that I liked reading, so that was helpful as well. But just don't feel guilty about doing nothing or relaxing, because it is just something that when you work full time in any guise, whether it's managerial or otherwise, you fit in so much when you finish work, but then the day is a little bit longer. But at the same time, I suppose the only other advice would be kind to yourself. I suppose just make sure that you meet some human being, and this is about the connection every day, because just once or twice you'll be thinking, uh-oh, I'm not maybe seeing somebody today, as in somebody other than your family. I think now that's easier said than done if it's in the middle of winter, but just try and meet up with somebody every day. But it does give you a great opportunity to sort of reflect. I also I left it for a year, but I just to volunteer to give back. And I'm volunteering with a lovely a lovely lady who's actually 101. So I visit her, and then I'm lucky enough as well that I decided myself that I'd like to be a coach. So I've just started recently on that journey, with being a life coach and career coach. So I suppose it's just also plan a few breaks, but I not this. I found it wasn't like a big bang holiday, like a 4 week, to South Africa sort of holiday for a whole load of reasons that didn't suit me. But just do plan to have something to look forward to, outside, just small little breaks, even just to keep you focused. But at the end of the day, be kind to yourself, and everybody always, has said to me, you deserve to enjoy yourself, and don't feel guilty about enjoying yourself. And I still feel it a bit. I feel that, I shouldn't be doing things. Just do things that you want to do, not that you have to do. That's my advice.
Fabulous. And I hope you enjoy kind of reflecting back on your career over the past couple of days, because
I
it
did.
sounds like you really have reflected and thought about it.
Yeah, I did. And I really. I'm not the kind of person that I do reflect, and I'm very much, I'm very into mindfulness and just taking every day as it comes, and whatever. But I really enjoy the opportunity to think about what's gone on over the 40 years, and if any of my words can help anyone or inspire anyone, I'm delighted. Thank you for asking me. I'm only too delighted to be part of this podcast.
And thank you so much for joining us. And congratulations on what sounds like an amazing career. And best luck with all your volunteering and life coaching and everything for the future. I think you already said that other people had said it too, but you, from the sounds of it, you absolutely deserve to have a lovely retirement.
Thank you. Thank you. And it also it makes you realize life is precious, as well. And you just look forward rather than enjoy every day that comes up, because you just never know either what's around the corner. And I'm just very, very lucky that I'm healthy and happy, and I'm surrounded by people that love me, and I've a very good network of ex colleagues and friends that are very important to me. And my little dog.
And you exude this positivity that is just so fantastic, and it kind of injects a bit of life into all of us. Definitely has injected a bit of life into me today, so thank you so much.
And I'm very proud to call myself a speech and language therapist. That was one of the other things that I just found difficult when I retired, that I said, that identity thing, I'm still a speech and language therapist even though I'm retired. So that was a little bit difficult as well, to sort of
Yes.
actually have to let that go. But no, I'm still a core member, and I'm just, but it's just when you stop working, you never stop being a speech and language therapist.
Once a speech and language therapist, always a speech and language
Always a speech
therapist.
and
And
language. Exactly.
I'm sure
Thanks a
you're
million.
still I'm sure you're still hearing from previous colleagues and people asking you questions and getting advice.
There's never any problem with that. I'm
Yeah.
delighted always to give back something. So thank you very much, Caroline.
Amazing. Thank you, Gina. So
Okay.
you can
All
listen
right.
back to our other podcasts by following our social media channels on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook, or by searching ISLT in Conversation on Spotify.